We were there at the dawn of the third age of mankind, in the Earth year 2257, deep in neutral space. We were there when the last of the Babylon stations was founded. The name of the pod is Babylon 5.
The War Prayer, in which an Earth-first terrorist movement spills over to the station. Tensions rise between humans and aliens, and we learn that Ivanova has terrible taste in men.
Welcome to the Name of the Pod, where we talk about the ongoing legacy influence of Babylon 5 and why the heck we love this show so much when sometimes it's kind of clunky. I am one of your hosts, Chris Tatro.
And I am your other co-host, John Cassie. And today we're going to talk about the War Prayer.
This is, I wouldn't call this one a great episode. This certainly isn't, this is no, it's not even a Midnight on the Firing Line. It's not a, this is a middling episode. But like we talked about last time, where we had a lot of very key pieces being laid down for the long game, J. Michael Straczynski is definitely setting up things that we're going to see coming back down the line here in this episode. With this is really the first introduction of the Home Guard.
Yep.
Your militant Earth First terrorist organization, or you know, as they would probably see themselves, you know, protecting Earth. No one ever sees themselves necessarily as the terrorist, and really how there's this rising movement, this anti-alien movement on Earth and on the station. I mean, they have a pretty ambitious plan, and from the sound of it, they've got a lot of support back on Earth.
And indeed, there's already kind of evidence that they're executing their game.
Yes,
they're not at a formative stage. They're opening up their attacks. You know, not only at home on Earth, but in other places. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Babylon 5 is fairly remote. So if we're getting the kind of action we're getting from them out here, then
it's remote, but it's also high profile because
totally.
I mean, we've talked about how much money it must cost to have built five of these things. And
indeed,
it's in the news when we get flashes of news back on Earth. Things that are happening on Babylon 5 are pretty front page, and it's the place where all of these aliens are coming together. If this is gonna stick in the craw of this Stormfront-like organization, if anything is, it's going to be the Babylon Project.
Totally. And you know, I'm in this. You know, we're recording this in you know, kind of late 2017, and when I'm thinking about our own age, right? You think about What does Earth look like to these home guarders with all of these aliens coming to Earth? And we've had reference over and over and over again about, you know, the alien presence on Earth right after the end of the Earth-Mimbari War. Well, I'm mindful of movements like Brexit.
Right.
Right, which comes in part because, you know, if you're an English person and you're looking around you in 2017, there are a lot more people from Spain and Portugal and Poland and Montenegro, you know, working in your restaurants than there were 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And if you have a consciousness of that and that strikes you as something that's undermining of your culture, then you might be motivated to act in some kind of way.
Right. And that's the key point that we've got in the episode as well, that we have, you know, Malcolm Biggs, what a name,
right,
you know, that he frames it around, you know, the aliens are setting the policy on Earth and they're taking away our jobs. You know, we've had that's an age old, you know, I'm sure in 1993, it was just in the news as much as we're hearing today. You know, that's
right. This goes all the way back.
But it's the veneer, right? You know, the they're taking our jobs right as the veneer in this and in 2017, covering the, you know, the racism and the xenophobia that's underneath. It's more a symptom, whereas it's being voiced as this is the problem. It's you know, right. It's something that's, you know, that's not really what you're going on about, is it?
Right, right. You know, you look at just the history of the United States, and that first great wave of post-independence immigration is Irish people fleeing the famine in the 1840s. Right. And they arrive in the 1840s, an American know-nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The great nativist anti-immigrant party, you know, reaches their sort of first kind of peak, and then that sort of movement, that nativist movement, declines. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, the Irish, the Italians, anytime you get a wave of immigration into the United States, so this is nothing new to us now here in 2017, you're right.
Right.
And it's not unique to the United States. It's
exactly
it's a reaction to that things are, you know, that things are changing. You know, I think Malcolm says something along the lines in this episode of, you know, that he doesn't say we're going to, you know, make Earth great again, or we're going to go back to when Earth was great. There's always this longing for the time when things were, well, when we were the ones running the show and things were going the way that we wanted it to go, which clearly isn't
right.
Happening today, and things are terrible today and whatnot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's always this hearkening back to a reality that never was. Mm-hmm. And if Earth is at war with the Mimbari, you know, 10 years ago, mm-hmm. Well, there's an Earth alliance that has aliens in it, presumably, well before that war. I mean, this is Earth hasn't been interacting with alien cultures for the first time after the Earth-Mimbari War. They knew the Centauri, at least, right?
Yeah, they knew that they were out there. And in fact, there was a mention in one of the earlier episodes that the Centauri sort of tricked Earth into thinking mm-hmm. that they were related. Oh, it was a misunderstanding. There have been these kinds of relations. I don't know. You know, we don't really see Earth at all. How large is the alien presence on Earth? How much are they integrated into the Earth Alliance? And or is it really that the Earth Alliance is really Earthers, is really humans? And
right.
You know, this
we don't know
this talk about, you know, that aliens are setting the policies for us. Well, that's really just this sort of perception that because they have a seat at the table, you know, and they're opening their mouths at all, that's clearly diminishing our piece of the pie.
Right.
And you know,
I
was just going to say, as I was saying that last rambling line, you know, the fact that I'm saying aliens and that the word aliens is always used to describe all of these other people, even that seems othering in a very strong. I mean, the when you call somebody an alien, that's it's part and parcel of the word. But I don't know if there's anything, if there's any other way of addressing these groups of people in 2257.
Well, I mean, you're
the word just keeps sticking with me that we're here, we're trying to bring everybody together on Babylon 5 and trying to, you know, create a peaceful alliance of all of these peoples throughout the universe, and they keep coming back to that word aliens, and you know, I keep hearing it. Okay. It keeps jumping out at me.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts that come off of that. Alien is a particularly othering word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll stick to that. We're not even going to talk about the use of alien in our own political discourse.
Yeah.
Maybe we are, but we're not. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about right now. You know, you've got an Earth that has, you know, lots of humans on it and a certain number of people who are not human,
mm-hmm.
but they're sentient and they're recognized as people and they get to participate in the process and all of this kind of stuff. what does the show want us to think about them? Because this is television, mm-hmm. and you everything's sort of attenuated by the fact that it has to be scripted and it's meant to generate drama. Nobody wants a character to come in and do 3 minutes of exposition.
No, but we'll get it.
Right. So we have to get something. And to your point, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to think as a viewer. I understand what the Home Guard stands for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'm supposed to agree with them.
No, I think that's very clear. I think the position right. of the show, the position of you may as well
yeah,
call
the
it,
political the, position
you know,
of the
Jane
show
is you know a much more liberal position and much more accepting and harmonious you know of all of these sentient peoples throughout the galaxy.
Right. And yet you know I've got Azed Bor, the daughter of the Chancellor of the Klingon High Council in Star Trek VI.
It always comes back to Star Trek VI with you, doesn't it?
Yes. What was David Warner's character? Chancellor
Gorkon. Yep.
Okay, Gorkon dies. Mm-hmm. Oh no, this is before he dies. This is when they're having dinner, and she calls out the Federation. Mm. Present company accepted as a humans only club, yeah. right? Inalienable rights. The very idea of the Federation is racist. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this is an interesting. You know, I can see the angle
yeah.
right now. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind. Blah mm-hmm. blah 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 blah. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal all alone in the night.
Yeah.
All right. You didn't have to write it that
no.
way. Dozens of species
mm-hmm.
wrapped in or something
yeah.
else
yeah.
that makes the equivalent, you know, humans are no better than.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly, you know, the way that the story's been told so far, it's Narn, Centauri, Centauri, and Narn, Narn, and Centauri are the most important.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my takeaway. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, I don't know. That's something that
yeah.
I
wonder if Straczynski were writing this show today with 25 more years of, you know, thought progress in the area of how we talk about otherness.
Yep.
I wonder
yep.
how much of this would be written completely differently.
Yeah, and I'm not slagging
no,
him.
No.
Right, I'm just saying, what if it sounds yeah. like that? Is that different?
If you know? You're listening to this, J. Michael Straczynski, and given a lot of what we've said, I kind of hope he's not. Please feel free to write in and let us know if you would have changed that opening line at thenameofthepod@gmail.com.
Exactly.
See, I told you one of these days we'd mention it. Before the
we'd get
the
it
podcast.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're only in minute 12, but that's all right.
We'll edit out everything before this.
I like the fact that we don't live in a world where there's no racism.
Mm-hmm.
What I would have wanted this episode to do is to acknowledge what I think is likely to be true, and that is that human society, even 250 years from now, is still going to be dealing with human versus human racism.
Yeah, yeah, that hasn't – we don't – well, we certainly haven't seen it addressed in the show to this point. I don't get the sense that Straczynski's of the opinion that by the you know mid-23rd century, we're all going to be one shining, happy, kumbaya – human species,
right.
You know, a la Star Trek. but we do have a unified Earth government, which is certainly a step further than is even imaginable today.
Yep.
But you're right. It's not addressed in any direct way. We've talked before about some of the economic inequalities that seem to be present but aren't really called out directly.
Right.
So yeah, you're right. I would like to see that. I would like to see something acknowledging that, much in the same way where we saw the long line of all of the Earth religions.
Precisely.
Talk about how, well, you know, Earth is still divided in and amongst itself. Humans still are not perfect, and we're trying to move into this other stage, this other completely different arena of dealing with, you know, all these other worlds and the peoples from all these other worlds.
And sociologically,
we haven't even cleaned up our own backyards yet.
Exactly. Yeah. We're not even really ready to set aside our most ancient prejudices.
But we have the potential to be great.
Yep.
That's one of the theses of the program is the potential of human greatness to transcend all of this stuff. And I think that's something that we see in a lot of Straczynski's writing and a lot of his work.
Yeah, that could very well be why we get that Kosh material.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You know, if you read the peerless and nearly perfect Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, the online resource that, you know, if you want to know about the details, this is what you read.
Right.
You know, they mentioned the fact that this segment with Kosh was actually filmed for another episode that ran long.
Oh, was it?
So they cut the whole thing. Yeah, they cut the whole thing and put it in here. I think it actually kind of works here.
Yeah.
As a way of looking at humanity as somehow not quite at the level of the Narn and the Centauri, but not quite at the Vorlon. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind.
Right.
And so when you have the dawning of a new age, you always have friction between the agents of the new age and the agents of the previous age.
Right.
Yeah. And the Vorlons maybe are telling us that, take heart, cast in your lot with a future, because your future is one of goodness, of prosperity, of unity, maybe.
And that's I think the message of the Vorlon in general, but that doesn't seem to be those aren't the words that we get out of Kosh in this episode at all.
He's staying
the very aloof. He says we don't interfere. I forget his exact line, but we don't take any interest in his other worlds. At the same time, he's standing next to the Guardian of Forever and watching all of these scenes from
right.
Earth history. It's like, oh, if you don't take any interest, then why are you checking this stuff out? So it's clearly, you know, we don't take any interest in these lesser thing beings, but we don't include you. You're one of the good ones out there, I guess.
Right. And, you know, to the point of our thesis statement, why does this program matter? This is one of the reasons.
Definitely.
Because this
kind of message.
He's planting a flag.
Yep. Yeah.
I am going to tell stories about race, and I'm going to tell stories that involve religion, and I'm going to tell stories about homegrown terrorists.
Yep.
And these are not – this is not a Narn front blowing up buildings on Earth.
Right.
Right? These are Earth people doing these things. And let's not, you know, sugarcoat it. I mean, Jakar is right to be outraged.
Yeah. He was really I felt like he was kind of over the top, but it's completely understandable.
Well, he's always working his agenda.
We talked about that last time.
Right.
That he's got a long game in mind, but that when it comes to something that's impacting him personally, and this is a matter of his public safety, he kind of loses it. He doesn't have perspective when it comes to – we saw that with the Black Rose or the Blue – Black Rose. Jeez, I talk about how
– when someone was trying to assassinate him.
Yeah, I talk about how bad my memory is, and I can't even remember what, you know, what this major point from a couple of episodes ago was. So
right.
Yeah.
This is the point when Natoth had to be
– Yes. The grown-up.
Sort of – the grown-up. Exactly.
Yeah. And you really Chakar being out there and inciting the crowd to violence and saying the reason that these crimes are unsolved is the perpetrators are humans.
Now, right.
Really stirring it up a lot more than we've seen him. We've seen him get frustrated at Sinclair and at the other command staff, all human command staff, when things don't go his way, and he'll fluster and march off. But this was the first time that he was really baring teeth at them, I think.
Yeah, that in the past, maybe there was sort of a realization on Jakar's part that it's part of the game. Mm-hmm. It's part of this diplomatic game. I get it. You know, you're going to keep my ship out, you know, in space, and you're going to – that's mm-hmm. you moving a bishop, and then I'm going to move this rook and check and – right. But now, no.
Yeah.
This is not the game anymore. Yeah. And I expect you, Commander, to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything that we've seen about –
and that's a very different Chakar.
About the houses of how the Narn and the Centauri operate is through
– yep.
these elaborate kinds of plans and you know backroom dealings and this kind
right.
of outright terrorism and violence is just not what they're going to put up with. Although
for sure,
you know, I think if we knew more about the Narn war against the Centauri, we'd see that this was something that they certainly had in their quiver.
Well, we're going to see in short mm-hmm. order. What the Narn and the Centauri are prepared to do to each other.
Right.
And that will give us hours of fodder
yeah.
about justice mm-hmm. and war and things of that sort. Yeah. But race-motivated terrorism mm-hmm. on television in 1994.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for them. Again, you know, this idea we're going to plant this narrative flag in a place mm-hmm. that is very uncomfortable, and it opens the door
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to these other programs.
Did you get you
that I just can't imagine
did
doing?
Did you get you wrote this episode? This was not J. Michael Straczynski.
No.
This is.
Oh, I thought he wrote everything.
No, he didn't write this one. This was written by
DC Fontana.
Ding ding ding! Journey to Babel.
Oh,
yeah.
DC Fontana,
and
one of the legends.
Yes, yes. And you know, Journey to Babel, where we see this same kind of thing going on. You know, this is
bringing
the aliens together, and oh, you know, there's somebody's got. But in that case, you know, it wasn't humans that were causing the problems. It was those pesky Andorians. You know, we know we can never trust them.
Andorians.
Mm, we have a history with Andorians, John and I.
We do. We do.
But it's also, I was reading something recently concerning the upcoming new Star Trek series and how they were releasing a restriction that Roddenberry had put in place all along where he wanted humans to always be perceived as being better in some way.
Yeah.
That you don't have the human crew, the Starfleet crew squabbling with each other. You don't have the... You know, don't have the humans doing terrorism, and that's now being taken off the table, I think, properly for the new series.
Yeah.
So, but here, yeah, 1993, we're seeing Straczynski's making that move. You know, the humans are supposed to be the ones that we relate to the most, and they're the ones knifing and branding and assassinating people,
right?
Aliens, if I may use that problematic word, as we've discussed earlier. He's making a strong statement, then it really is a lot of much of this episode felt a lot more current and a lot less, you know, 25 years old. I mean, these sort of things.
Totally.
He's taking things from the headlines and things that were going on in the world at the time. And you know, now we're here 25, 26 years later. And geez, we haven't, you know, we're still dealing with the same things, and in some ways even worse.
In some ways, even worse, yeah. Right? Yeah, I would have to go back and actually look at the production date and when this was made mm-hmm. and things like that. But when you think about the nature of what the terrorism discourse was in 1993, 1994, what's in that discourse? Is the first World Trade Center bombing in it? Has that happened?
I don't believe it has. I want to say that was 97.
Timothy McVeigh has not happened.
That is in...
That's in 95 or 96.
No, that... I wanted to say that was 94.
I'm going to look it up.
One moment, please, folks. While John is looking that up, I'm also going to dip in...
April 1995. Okay. It hasn't happened.
Right, right. Okay.
And has the Branch Davidian matter happened? Now, that was early in the Clinton administration, 1993. Yeah. So I think that's happened. But that's not terrorist.
No, but it was in some ways in response to Ruby Ridge, wasn't it? Which was was definitely a little more on the on the terrorist nod.
Yep.
There are definitely things happening if we look outside of the United States. Definitely things happening globally. We're dealing with we're dealing with Ireland. Still a very hot
situation.
What
is terrorism?
Yeah.
Right. It's the IRA and it's the PLO. Yeah.
And that may be a little more 70s and 80s than 90s, but that's the world that certainly we grew up in.
Right. And in the United States, our conversation tends to move fairly slowly. Mm. So when I say, it's the IRA and the PLO, obviously there's more going on, but it takes our discourse a long time to catch up with change.
Yeah.
Right. And the idea of a homegrown movement, that's just not something that people were talking about in the general discourse, right?
Yep.
And good on JMS for bringing it into this story, and the influence is profound.
Yeah. This is only.
At least I think the influence is profound.
This is the tip of the iceberg of this storyline. We definitely have more coming along. We've mentioned that it certainly seems like this organization is well established on Earth. They've got these chameleon suits, these invisibility tech suits that are developed by Earth Force. They say, we got our hands on some prototypes. Well, I wonder how they got their hands on them. How much is Earth Force? And I think we'll see where that's going down the line. Didn't really buy Sinclair's going undercover into the laying it on super thick. But, given his past, it's not unreasonable that given his history with the war and his posting out here, that a different person could have had a very different attitude towards all of these, all these other aliens, all these other civilizations and peoples.
Right.
But, yeah.
One of the things that we talked about in the pre-show, switching gears now a little bit, is this new Veer.
Mm. Standing up.
I like this Veer who's standing up to Londo and who's taking some actions on his own and doing his own thing. Yeah. When Stephen first passed... Mm. There were, a lot of the conversation was about what a decent human being he was, and what a good person. Yeah. And I'm glad to see some of this coming to express itself in this character, who you and I've talked about, and in your the article you wrote some time back about Stephen first passing, talking about how Veer is, in some respects, the conscience of the show.
Yeah, he's the compass.
Yeah, and I think that we see that very clearly in his takedown of Londo and his own culture's values, right?
And the surprising turnaround of that, even within the course of this episode. He starts off, with the bumbling and, I sort of told them I was the ambassador. And this sort of ridiculous Romeo and Juliet B plot that we've got going on here, but it, not only does Veer manage to stand up, I think we get some great character moments from Londo out of this. We see more of his melancholy and his kind of regret on a personal level. We've seen that about the Centauri Republic / Empire, that, oh, we're fading and we're nothing that we once were. And now he's talking about this, his story about his father. It's a good set of character beats for Veer and for Londo.
Right.
And, I'm going to dip into my always, pointing out the actor on the show.
Did you
catch who was playing?
I never know where you're going with this.
No, I'm unpredictable. I'm like the wind. Did you catch who was playing Arya? The girl?
No.
That was Danica McKellar, Winnie Cooper.
Oh, good grief. Yeah, from the Wonder Years?
Yep.
I would never in a million years have made that connection.
Her face looked familiar. I've never watched The Wonder Years, but I was like, oh, she's... And then looked it up, and sure enough, boom, there we go. I was certain that Malcolm Biggs, I can't even remember the actor that was playing him, was someone recognizable. But he's been in every soap opera under the sun for forever, and certainly looks like he should be. But he didn't...
Yeah, I swear I've seen something... with him in it. He's probably one of these guys who's in everything.
I think so.
You know, like that. There's a guy who was in The Dark Knight who is in Gotham, and he's in like Arrow, and he's in Supergirl. Okay. I'm like, he played, sort of a Keith Ledger Joker flunky. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of lines, and he's got this very expressive face. He's everywhere now. Everywhere I look, it's this guy.
That guy.
Of our age
of that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Are we at the Straczynski-est dialogue?
I think we are. Have we arrived? I'm looking down my list of topics, and I think we've covered everything. Go ahead. I stole yours, I believe, last time, so I want to give you the opportunity.
Right. Now, okay, I'm back doing the wrong thing. Because it's a good line. Yeah. You ready? These are my three wives, pestilence, famine, and death. Mm. Do you think I married them for their personalities? Their personalities could shatter entire planets. Yeah. What a great line. Now, go back and rewatch that, okay? When Londo shows the photo, watch Veer's reaction. He backs away, like he's backing away from some sort of like a warthog or something, you know? Like, ooh. Yeah. I was like, that's the best part of the episode.
It really is. And all of the wives are making these faces, these exaggerated faces in their portraits. So it's entertaining. Yeah. That was definitely a great moment. My line comes from that B plot. And again, doing it wrong, I think this is a thesis statement for J. Michael Straczynski, and I've ragged on him in this and in previous episodes, but this is when I didn't write down her name, the Mimbari poet says, she's talking with Londo, and she says, "Ambassador, I've traveled far, I've seen much, and what I've seen tells me that all sentient beings are best defined by their capacity and their need for love." I mean, really, that's going to be an undercurrent in this show. It's certainly an undercurrent in Sense8. Overcurrent in Sense8.
I
don't know about any of his other stuff in between. It was in some of his comics work that I had seen here and there, but
I think that's in Rising Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
interesting.
I liked that line. I thought,
well, yeah.
It was, as it must be. It was a little long and a little over flourished, but it hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, agreed. I think we've hit the war prayers nail on the head.
I think so,
coming up next, and the sky full of stars in a couple of weeks, where we're going to get more. this kind of interesting backstory unpacked.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, find us on Facebook, the name of the podcast. Look us up. You'll find us on the web, thenameofthepod@gmail.com.
We do essays on the website for the weeks that we don't have episodes of the podcast going up. If you haven't caught those, they're short. You don't have to read a lot. It's okay. It's not scary.
Yep.
Go and check them out.
Yep.
They're good. John says good things.
Go and check them out. Yeah, and so does Chris. Medium. Yeah,
it's okay.
Right.
All right.
Well, right.
Thanks.
Folks, thanks for listening.
Don't forget how to dance.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Okay. Until next time.